Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about some of the common mobility limitations for the deadlift. We talk about what may happen when your knee pops after an ACL reconstruction. And we talk about the effects of static stretching on power development.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. We're up in Boston. We are at Champion PT and Performance. You know the crew by now. Well, no, we just keep doing these episodes over and over again. Mike Scaduto, Lenny Macrina. Well, we're going way out of order. Dan Pope, Dave Tilley, everybody has their own websites. Check them out. They're pretty cool. But no, keep asking some questions. You guys are doing a great job. We're getting, you know, the questions are getting better, actually. I actually enjoyed this this batch, kind of going through the latest batch and see some of the good ones out there. We're getting like a bigger, diverse group of questions and stuff, which probably means our readership or listenership.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Our subscribers are probably getting more diverse too. So keep asking away anything you guys want to talk about: PT, fitness, sports performance, business, specific sport things, anything you guys want to talk about. So awesome. We have two very whimsical physical therapy students here today. Dashing physical therapy schools. We have Johnny LaRoof is on fire from Clarkson University, otherwise known as
Buzz Lightyear.
And we have Brooks Calvin Klein, because we can't figure out a better nickname, otherwise known as
Woody.
Right. So what's the theme on that, Dave, again?
Just Toy Story.
Remind everyone.
All right, here's a story. Quick story.
There's a story.
I couldn't figure out his name. I committed to Brooksby Village. Horrific, right?
Yeah.
He refuses to admit this, but I asked him to get like ice or something, and he literally looked at me like this. He's like, all right. And I was like, oh my God, he looks like Woody. Like, he looks exactly like Woody. The patient I was with was like, yeah, definitely. I was like, all right, your name's Woody.
Woody.
And then we got Buzz to go along with
him. Boom. Buzz.
Star Command.
Nice. Who's first? Community. Woody or Buzz? Who wants to?
I'll take the first one.
All right. Buzz it up, Buzz.
All right. Bobby from Washington, D.C. What are the most common mobility limitations you see that cause people to compensate during a deadlift?
What are the most common limitations to compensate during a deadlift? David, why don't you start this one? What do you think?
Grandma?
Dr. Tilley?
In trouble?
David. What do we got? Dr. Tilley?
So I think that not as commonly assessed for, but just pure posterior hip hinging, the ability to just, hinge your hips back far, whether that's...
What is that?
That's what I've seen. Oh, yeah. Capsular, maybe. It's a tougher sell, but capsular, post-tissue, like soft tissue.
Of the hip?
Of the hip, yeah. So hip soft tissue, hip posterior capsule. I think part of it comes down to, just spinal alignment, the ability to maintain neutral spine with core control as you drift your hips back. I think that most people jump to posterior chain hamstrings and like, more neural type stiffness, but I think that people just don't hinge a lot in their daily life well, so that probably is something they lose. And then a conventional, narrow stance deadlift is pretty demanding mobility-wise if you're going to do that. So I guess Dan the Human Deadlifter can do more on this topic. But
nice. All right, so good ones, though. So maybe some posterior hip tightness. Yeah, I think hamstring tightness is real. I think there could be like other things, but hamstring tightness. What else, Dan?
Man, I'd say those are the big bang for your buck ones. I do see a lot of people, and it's not just a deadlift, but if you're trying to do increased range of motion stuff like a snatch, the bar path is really important. Be able to push the knees back so the bar can go kind of through the knees, right? It requires a ton of mobility in order to keep a neutral spine. I think also for Olympic weightlifting, a lot of times we're really trying our best to stay upright with our chest, which is going to increase the range of motion demands, where with your deadlifting as a powerlifter, you can kind of get your chest coming down a bit, which gives you a little more range of motion. So especially for something like a snatch, it's going to be really important. But I would say the most common one is probably going to be hamstrings, neural tension, maybe some of the posterior hip too. And the people that are really bad at things like toe touch might have trouble with bar path or in snatch. So what I'll do is if I see someone that's having a really tough time, I'll do something like a toe touch assessment or straight leg raise. And then a lot of times it is kind of the tension on the back. So.
Yeah, I think the difference is what you pointed out. Like, I think like upper back mobility is huge for like a conventional deadlift versus like an Olympic lifting deadlift. When you watch Olympic lifting clean deadlifts or clean pulls, it's much more vertical, and like that's very hard for some people to like get the bar in front of them.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's probably an overlooked one. Yeah. I like that. So with that makes sense. And I think, you know, the question was about mobility, right? But what if like you're in a huge anterior pelvic tilt? What does that do? I mean, is that a mobility thing? Is that an alignment thing? Like, because that's going to, you know, put your hamstring maybe in a longer position.
Pre-tension,
it's going to be super hard to shift. So, I mean, I don't know. Any want to touch on that at all? Or?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a pendulum swings kind of thing. I think you see this sometimes when people are teaching a squat. They'll teach, like, sit back. That sit back cue happens so much that people end up, like, bringing their toes up off the floor and it goes a little too far. I think the same thing happens when people are trying to find tension in Olympic weightlifting. They say, feel your hamstrings, feel your hamstrings, feel your hamstrings. So what people end up doing is doing a lot of anterior pelvic tilt to get a stretch in the hamstrings. So they're sending those hips way far back in something like a clean or a deadlift when they're trying to find the right position. And because of that, they're probably getting a little overextension in that position.
Yeah, I like that.
Just hip problems, so spine problems.
Could be mobility, but maybe you're also pre-tensioning in too much anterior tilt and you're putting yourself at a disadvantage mobility-wise. So interesting. Awesome. Woody. Wood it up, Woody? No, it doesn't work as good as Buzz.
Alan from Venice, Florida. My daughter is a high-level soccer player, 10 months out from left ACL revision. We are being very conservative and waiting at least 12 months prior to return to sport. Yesterday, she was jogging to the ball, preparing to strike it with her left leg, instep strike, and during the backswing, felt a pop in the swinging knee. The next morning, it was swollen, stiff, and painful. Do you have any thoughts on what she could have done?
Well, I think first lesson to be learned here is always tell us which knee the surgery was beforehand, because I don't know if we can tell, but it sounds like the swing leg.
Is her revision leg?
The swing leg and a kick.
Yeah, preparing to strike it with her left leg. It's the left ACL.
It is left ACL?
That had the revision.
Oh, yeah. He said that?
Yeah.
I missed that. Okay, I'm sorry. So left leg was swinging. Well, anyway, it's a revision, which tells you a lot right there. This is not her first ACL on this side. Something didn't go well. So this is a revision. That's one. But, all right, even with a benign thing like that, it popped. The next day it's painful, swollen, sore. LennyMacrina.com, what do you got?
Ron Hanks.
Yeah. I mean, pop, swollen.
Pop,
right,
swollen.
There.
I mean, typically if it's a delayed swelling, like it got swollen the next day, then maybe it's not as bad as you think. Maybe it's not the dreaded ACL. It was a planted in trying to swing with the opposite leg, so you always have to rule in or rule out the ACL. But then you start thinking meniscus, maybe a patella instability or a patella dislocation or subluxation. That would be my big three, would be patella, meniscus, and ACL. Knowing she has a history of ACL on the other side, you know, there's a higher chance it's probably going to...
I think it's the same side.
Swing
leg. It's the same leg, right?
Left,
okay, left ACL revision. Preparing to strike the ball with her left leg.
And it's the swing leg.
And then
pop!
Felt a so pop the, in the swinging knee.
So, okay, so, yeah, okay, yeah. So, okay.
Wait, show me again? I'm confused.
Pop!
Okay, so
it does not solve strike.
All right, so...
Right. So without knowing all of her details, I think my answer doesn't change.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to rule in as much patella subluxation, but I definitely would think about meniscus, ACL. If she had a hamstring graft for the revision and or the primary, maybe it was like a little scarring, because you do lay down scar tissue in that area. Some say your semi-T will grow back, or your gracilis will grow back, some tendon, so maybe it was that. But with the swelling, that's a little bit more concerning to me, so I would definitely want to rule out meniscus or ACL.
Yeah, I would say that the mechanism is surely optimistic, right? It doesn't seem like that. Like, kind of, I think what you're alluding to in the question, not that big of a deal. It's the kick leg that seems weird that it happened. But the pop and swelling is concerning enough. I think your next move is to go back to the surgeon.
I think that's
pretty obvious there. Pop and swelling's typically not good, right? Yeah. But maybe it's not the worst. But, you know, like Len said, probably, you know, meniscus, ACL tear again. And look, it didn't have to tear on that mechanism right there. It could have just been like the final straw. But ACL meniscus, maybe a patellar subluxation, something like that. But the pain and swellings, that's the unusual part. That's the curveball. So I would definitely look into that. So awesome. What else? We got one more?
Yep. This question's from Jack Reynolds. I looked at research stating that doing stretching or some type of foam roll before an explosive activity reduces power and elasticity, therefore you should avoid. What do you recommend for those that need range of motion, though, before these activities?
I like that. That's actually a good question. So there's some research that says that shows static stretching, we'll say, decreases your power output afterwards. So if you stretch your hamstrings and then immediately went for like a jump, your vertical would be less, right? Something like that. I think that's been shown in multiple planes of motions in sports, which is interesting. But I like the question, though. But what do you do if somebody's limited and you wanted to work on their mobility? Who wants to start?
I guess I'll say something. Yeah.
Yeah. Please.
I like this stuff. But what I will say is that it sounded like it was foam rolling also decreases your ability to produce force. I haven't read that, so maybe there's research that you guys have, but I think overwhelmingly we've shown that foam rolling beforehand does not affect your power or your strength. And I think this is something I've heard a little bit more from kind of like the mobility wad type stuff. I know Kelly likes to do rolling afterwards because he feels like it might shut down some of the tissue, you know. But all the studies I've read, that doesn't happen. Overwhelmingly, foam rolling beforehand is not going to affect your strength, and it's going to improve your range of motion. So I think that's probably worthwhile. If you have an individual that's chronically stiff, though, maybe they need to do some more stretching, that type of thing. I would say afterwards is probably the best. The other piece is that what is that athlete trying to accomplish? Are they trying to get better at their sport? If so, I'd say then maybe you need to prioritize some of that stretching before you do some of the strength training, because maybe that mobility limitation is the biggest problem. Plus, you're still going to gain performance ability by training strength, even though you might be, I don't know, 2 to 5% different strength-wise during your lifts. I feel like it's probably not going to have too big an effect in the long run. But if it's right before like a powerlifting competition, I wouldn't, you know, stretch the hamstrings and then immediately jump on the bar. That's probably not going to work well.
Right, that makes sense. I feel original research on this topic showed that force output was decreased after static stuff. It seems familiar to me that there was a study that showed that on self-myofascial release too, but I forget. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say I don't know the definitive answer. But I think there's been other studies that completely refute this concept. Yeah. And I think there's two main things you got to think about with the research. One is not everybody's the same. If a really loose person does static stretching ahead of time, they're probably going to have a decrease in power output that's different than somebody that's really tight. Maybe somebody does need it. So I don't think we can extrapolate that info to everybody. I think that would be my first thing. There may be some people where it's not as big of a deal. I do feel like our loose people that overstretch do get less powerful, right? But the other thing that research is starting to show now is that if you do static stretching and then dynamic movement stuff, and then measured your power, it's not down. Hmm. So one of two things happened. Either the static was mitigated by the dynamic and stuff like that, or simply time, right? So maybe your power output is decreased with static stretching for X seconds or minutes, but that's certainly not going to stick like that for hours. That seems a little excessive to me. So by the time you do some dynamic movement and start moving around, your power is probably back. Right, so I think that's something to think about. Some of the research was stretch, jump, right? And you're like,
stretch,
oh,
back squat.
Yeah, and yeah. It's different there. So, something to think about. So, awesome. Well, another good round of questions. That's three, right? Perfect. Good round of questions. Appreciate it, guys. Go to MikeRandall.com, click on that podcast link, and you can fill out the form to ask us any crazy questions like this. Anything you guys want to talk about would be awesome. But ask us some questions. Go to iTunes and Spotify, rate, review, subscribe, and we'll see you guys on the next episode. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeRandall.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeRandall.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.